7-11, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. It's a hunk-a-hunk-a-burning Medicare podcast. And now, joking and smoking, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, and thanks for coming. Thanks for joining us. This is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, episode number 49, being recorded on April 28th. Thank you for joining us, everyone. The announcer you just heard was Drew McMillan, one of my favorite nephews. I have several, you know, but he is not only a professional announcer of the unpaid variety, as witnessed by his work here, but when he's not working for us, he steals a little bit of spare time and hosts a Canadian television show called Powerboat TV. And if you want to see Drew in action, you can watch him on powerboattv.com in the United States. There are episodes that Drew is hosting from 2020 all over that website. So, we have come to another meeting of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, and I always like to define that lazy man or that lazy lady that we're podcasting to. These are people that are interested in Medicare that know they have to make a decision at some point in the future, but boy, they'd just rather almost do anything else than have to learn about Medicare. And so that's why Randy Carson and I are here to spoon feed it to them. A little bit of sugar helps the medicine go down, as Randy corrected me one day, and that's what we're here to do. So, Randy, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon to you, Doug. I would just thought I would point out to the audience today that there will be a quiz later.
So, does that include me or?
Yeah, no. You're the expert, so you should know all the quiz questions that I would be posing.
Well, now, do you have these written down? Is there homework involved? Is there an opportunity to study? Is there extra credit?
No extra credit. And I'm not even guaranteeing they're about insurance.
All right. Well, I can't wait for that. That's a good reason to hang on until the end of the podcast then.
Yes, we're going to have the moral equivalent of a cliffhanger or a hanging Chad.
Okay, well, I hope I survive that long. If I drop dead of a heart attack, I'm going to be very disappointed not to be able to participate in that activity with everybody else. So rolling out the Medicare content for today. There's a little thing on the government Medicare site, which is one way to get there is www.medicare.gov. They've got this whole site all full of all kinds of Medicare information. Half of it's organized in ways that are just going to add to your confusion. But there's a little thing there that I refer people to frequently. If you put in the search window, is my test, item, or service covered? If you put that in the search, is my test, item, or service covered, then all of a sudden you're going to find all kinds of information about weird medical things that you might want to know whether Medicare is going to pay to have those things done or not. Some things yes, some things no. I think we had an episode a while back where I went through some of the weirder medical treatments, and I believe Medicare does not pay for acupuncture, but they do pay for some other weird thing. Oh, they pay for chiropractors. And chiropractors used to be considered the sucking the hind teat of the medical profession. When I first got into this business in the 1970s, chiropractors were able to be paid a limited amount per visit, and there was a limit on the number of visits you could go every year. And somehow they prevailed upon lawmakers to equalize that. So now they're treated much like other doctors, and they get a little bit more respect. But not true for acupuncturists, at least not in the Medicare world. But one question that was posed to me was, how about outpatient mental health care? Is that covered by Medicare? And if so, in what way is it covered? In other words, they pay everything, or do they pay only for some of it, or do they pay just very limited for very limited services? So I went to, is my test item or service covered, on www.medicare.gov, and I found two pages, which is more than I feel like reading, about mental health care, outpatient mental health care. Let's assume that you are a nut, or that you know a nut who's covered by Medicare. So, one thing that you can have as a Medicare participant is a depression screening. You can get one per year. The screening must be done in a primary care doctor's office or a primary care clinic. You can get individual and group psychotherapy with doctors, family counseling, testing to find out if you're getting the services you need and if your current treatment is helping you. You can get psychiatric evaluation, medication management, certain prescription drugs that aren't usually self-administered. This is all under Part B of Medicare, so 80% of it is paid by the government, 20% by you or your Medicare supplement if you're smart enough to have one. So certain prescription drugs, instead of being part of your drug plan, these would be paid for by Part B because they're psych drugs, I guess, and like injectables, I guess. I don't know much about psych drugs, fortunately. I've been referred to psychiatrists on more than one occasion by my angry wife, but that's a story for another time. So diagnostic tests, partial hospitalization for mental health treatment. There's a one-time Welcome to Medicare preventive visit, and that visit includes the measurement of possible risk factors for depression. There's also a yearly wellness visit. Talk to your doctor or other healthcare provider about changes in your mental health. They can evaluate your changes year to year. So then it says, what are your costs under Original Medicare for these mental health services? You pay nothing for your yearly depression screening if your doctor accepts Medicare assignment. You pay 20% of the Medicare approved amount for visits to your doctor or other healthcare provider to diagnose or treat your condition. That $200 Medicare Part B deductible applies. And then, let's see, your doctor or other healthcare provider may recommend you get services more often than Medicare covers. Or they may recommend services that Medicare doesn't cover. If this happens, you may have to pay some or all of the costs. So, mental health services help with conditions like depression and anxiety. I might have started on the back of this page and went to the front just now. Part B covers mental health services and visits with the following types of healthcare professionals: psychiatrists or other doctors, clinical psychologists, clinical social workers, clinical nurse specialists, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants. Medicare only covers the visits when they're provided by a healthcare provider who accepts assignment. Part B covers outpatient mental health services. A doctor, these outpatient services are rendered in a doctor's office or other healthcare provider's office, a hospital outpatient department, or a community mental health center. So if you put the last half of what I said in front of the first half of what I said, then you will have what you can read if you look at, is my item, test, or service covered on the government Medicare site, www.medicare.gov. So that's mental health, outpatient mental health treatment. And I don't know if I ever need the mental health treatment from the Medicare people, then I'm probably just going to tell them to lock me up, because frankly, I don't want to fight it. I will just go quietly. So I don't know if you feel that way or if you're going to fight all the way, Randy.
No, I don't know. I'll probably just go live in a cave someplace.
I think that's probably best for all of us if we just go live in a cave instead of My father had five kids, and he always told me there's a reason I had five children. If any three of you vote to send me to the home, I'm going to go quietly. He said, I will not fight you. Here's a guy that landed at 6:30 in the morning on Omaha Beach and lived to tell the tale, and then wound up as an artillery officer in Korea and once again lived to tell the tale. A lot of foreigners tried to kill him, but he said that if any three of his children voted to send him to the home, he would go quietly.
So there had to be an odd number then, huh?
Well, I'm thinking that if there was an even number, he might have come up with a different rationale. I don't know. I'm not sure he was that anxious to go to the home. He did die in the yard with a rake in his hand, so
I certainly wouldn't be anxious to go, I'll tell you that.
No. He grew up in Oklahoma, where I'm sure there was a county poor farm where that's where they sent the people that didn't have the wherewithal to provide for themselves anymore.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good place for anybody to be.
Probably not. This was during the Depression. I'm sure everything was kind of skewed during the Depression. A lot of things that maybe would have been fun later on were not so fun during the Depression when everybody was broke and it was all dusty.
Well, you know, I think looking at the clock on the wall here, Doug, we've got some time for some mailbag.
Oh, the words I love to hear.
The last time I was up at the Chip.
Don't tell me. You know, don't tell me people accosted you.
I was up there on a Friday night watching the bull riding. And, you know, considering as to what I was going to do after that. But I had a couple, three people approach me and said, hey, why isn't Doug doing any mailbag? We haven't had any decent mailbag action for at least three episodes.
All right. I hate to have unhappy listeners, and so I'm happy to do a mailbag, but I'm thinking maybe you ought to start hanging around in a different place, because the places you routinely go, they're accosting you all the time.
When I go out, you know, in the public, I follow my old, I was grown and, you know, raised up on a ranch sort of a thing, so They feel easy, and you know, they feel very comfortable approaching me because I've got an old hat, got my Wranglers on. I'm sorry, that's a religious discussion between cowboys, you know.
Okay.
There's the Wrangler cowboys, and then there's the Levi cowboys.
Sure. When I was a kid, I had Wrangler. When I grew up, I had Levi. I'm a Levi guy now.
Yeah, well, I'm still a Wrangler guy, so we have that. So they feel, you know, they feel easy. You know, they feel comfortable approaching me, but boy, I'll tell you, they are not happy when they don't get some mailbag.
Well, in that case, let's give them some mailbag. I want them to be happy. So we've got a mailbag item. And remember, this is a mailbag item that was sent to dbj@mlmmailbag.com. DBJ are my initials. And MLM is Medicare for the Lazy Man. So dbj@mlmmailbag.com. This is a gentleman named Scott who lives in Pennsylvania. He said, hi, Mr. Jones. I have read through the 2019 and 2020 editions of your primer and find it outstanding. I do have, and he used an exclamation point there for outstanding. I do have a clarification question regarding paragraph 1 on page 26.
Is this guy an attorney?
Apparently, I have to do research on my own damn book.
Paragraph 1, subpoint 3. What did you mean?
Section 18.6. You note that Medicare coverages should be scheduled to begin when the group plan terminates. In other words, here's a guy who's working actively and he's covered by his employer's group medical plan. And I said, in paragraph 1 on page 26, Medicare coverages should be scheduled to begin when the group plan terminates. And then he says, specifically what coverages? I know plan B for sure, and I assume the supplemental plans as well. How about the plan D drug plan? Many thanks for getting back to me in due course. Now, this is a pretty recent, this was only a month ago, so I wrote him back right away, but this is the first time we're doing it on a podcast, so it'll be 2 months by the time we post this episode. But I told him that I was referring to all four of the coverages that comprise complete health insurance protection, once you're under 65, insurance ends and you go on Medicare. Those would be Part A and Part B of Medicare, plus a supplement, plus a drug plan. When you enroll in these products in a timely manner, they cannot refuse to cover you based on health history, but that guarantee only lasts for a finite period of time. Also, it really isn't a good idea to roll the dice on going without health insurance for an extended period of time. Even though you may be healthy as a horse, accidental injury can occur without warning. This is why I suggest that you coordinate the start of your four new types of coverage with the end of your existing coverage. Was this a satisfactory answer? If not, please phrase your question to me in a different way and I will try again. Also, and this is the club that I pull out to beat everybody who writes to me, it would be helpful to me and future readers if you would go to the site where you bought the book and leave a very short customer review. Thanks for considering that. So, our correspondence continued. He said, "Hi, Mr. Jones. I am impressed that you got back to me so punctually." The secret is I really do enjoy communicating with people that have questions, so I always like to answer them right away. He said, "That was amazing that I got back to him so soon. You can count on me to leave a review on Amazon where I bought both books. I guess the impetus for my question was personal. I just turned 65 and I have a great employer-provided health plan from the Postal Service that I anticipate staying with for at least another 18 months before I step away from working. Accordingly, I enrolled in Plan A recently." He means Part A of Medicare, I'm sure. "And will hold off on enrolling in Plan B," I'm sure he means Part B of Medicare, "a supplemental plan, probably G as you suggest, and a drug plan until I no longer am working and enrolled in the employer health plan. It seems the special enrollment period under such circumstances, i.e. no late enrollment penalty, extends to all three future selections so long as Plan B and a supplement are enrolled in within 8 months of stopping work and losing employer health plan coverage, and a drug plan is enrolled within 2 months of stopping work and losing employer health plan coverage. Does that sound correct? I have to tell you that your book made understanding the process so easy. Thanks so much." So I replied to him, "You are generally correct about avoiding the penalties, but there is always a risk, however small, of having something bad happen during that 2 months you alluded to. My harping on the timing is just a result of a few horror stories I've heard over the years, so I cannot stop myself from warning people to make sure the new insurance starts right when the old insurance ends. Sounds like you have everything under control. I like your plan, and the burden of all that decision-making has now been lifted from your shoulders. Enjoy your new lifestyle when you pull the trigger on that. Oh, and thanks in advance for the customer review." So basically, it's just clarification that a guy who's planning to retire in the future wants to make sure that all of his medical, Medicare medical plans should begin in conjunction with the end of his existing medical coverage from his employer. And I confirm that. So I have an idea. I could have done it in a shorter period of time, but I enjoy talking with people that like to write in and ask questions. So how's our time looking?
We probably need to start winding down, putting your tray table up into its upright and locked position, and storing your laptop in the overhead bin.
Well, I hope that your people accosting you at the Buffalo Chip or at Harold's or wherever you go next will thank you for the one mailbag item that we got out today, and hopefully we can next time we'll get a few more done.
I can envision them, you know, gathered around the table up at the Chip, you know, having a beer, listening to this podcast.
Well, hello, guys. Buy one for me.
I know that someday, as soon as the COVID gets out of here, we're going to go up at the Chip and we're going to test the fact that they still have beer on tap and that it's cold.
I heard a horror story today that a lot of bars are trying to... Well, actually, a lot of beer distributors are trying to get their barrels back because the beer's going bad in the barrels because it's not being drunk.
That is absolutely true.
So they have to swap out the old inventory for the new inventory. And I was trying to think, how can I get my hands on a half barrel? Just a half barrel. I'm not greedy.
Yeah, they I'm not a beer distributor, but a good friend of mine is, and my understanding is that they do retrieve. They're required, depending on the agreement, they're required to retrieve those things, unused inventory, and for a variety of different reasons. But going stale usually is not one of them.
Well, no, I try to. I make that contribution to the beer industry to make sure that their inventory does not go stale at every occasion.
It's a sad state of affairs when a barrel of beer goes stale.
I hate this stupid Chinese virus. I want it to end so we can resume our lifestyle.
I think we ought to take on something like the Germans used to do. They would every afternoon, one of the children in the family, their job was to take a stainless steel pail, walk down to the local guest house, and grab a pail of beer for their father to have that evening. So it was fresh and, the whole smash. I think they could eliminate this whole problem of beer going stale in the barrel by just standing out front and letting me go get it with a pail.
Well, there you go. And would you drink it out of the pail or would you transfer it into some other container?
I would have a glass with me to dip.
Ah, there you go. Well, dipping is one thing. Kind of brings back my childhood where occasionally I would have to ride my bike into Wayne, Illinois to the little store and buy my mother cigarettes because if we had a car that was in the shop or something and she would tell me, okay, here's some money, go get some cigarettes. And you'd think I would have smoked some of them on the way home, but no, she always got the exact number of cigarettes that she ordered.
So what I have to ask, what brand was your mom into?
Lucky Strike.
Lucky Strike. Lucky Strike. Little sawed off ones.
Yeah, exactly right. Both my parents smoked Lucky Strikes when I was a kid. And I don't know, somehow they got on different filter brands. But as I got older, but that's what they smoked. Left over from the war, they used to be green before World War II, and all the green was being used by the Army and the, I guess, the Marine Corps for olive drab. So Lucky Strike made its logo red during the course of the war and all the years thereafter.
So, again, you know how my mind works. It's in really
strange. Well, I'm not sure. Does it actually work? Is that what we call that?
It follows around very, very circuitous path.
Should I get my mental health notes out again?
Maybe. I was going to ask you. Now, this is not necessarily an expert question for the insurance guy, but what cigarettes were available in the early 20th century, mid-20th century that didn't have a filter? What were the popular ones?
Well, I think they none of them had filters. I think
Lucky
that filter
was one of them.
Lucky Strike and Camel were the same size. They were both short.
Yeah.
And then there were Pall Malls, Chesterfield, Parliament, bunch of them like that. Philip Morris, sure. Yeah. Call for Philip Morris.
That's right. Yeah. So my dad used to smoke Philip Morris and he would go into the grocery store, and this was back when they were like, I don't know, 15 cents a pack.
Uh-huh.
And at Christmas time, they would have a pack of three, like wrapped up in Scotch tape or something, and you could get that pack of three for the price of two.
Oh, boy, those were the great old days, weren't they? I remember cigarette advertisements with the Santa Claus delivering cartons of Lucky Strikes to lucky recipients and doctors attesting to the fact that they always recommend the mild smoke of whatever brand, Pall Mall maybe. I used to smoke Pall Mall, and they weren't that mild, let me tell you.
No, Pall Mall regulars?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, they were, the reason I smoked them was when I worked in offices with a whole bunch of other smokers, nobody would bum them.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody wanted them.
Exactly right. They would be horrified. Can I bum a smoke? And I'd pull out my pack of Pall Malls and, hit the pack so that one cigarette would come out and they would look horrified, like, oh, never mind, yeah. I'll see you later.
I had a boss that used to use a similar technique to not give away cigarettes. he smoked this thing. I mean, these things were, I was a smoker, but I couldn't even hack these things. They were called English ovals.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
It was like sucking on the end of a bus exhaust pipe.
I know. They were very potent, but they were solidly packed. They were well-made cigarettes. And I told you about the fact that when I was in college in Tucson, Arizona, and that was a marketing ground for many, many companies and many new products. And Pall Mall brought out a brand called Pall Mall Lights, which had a filter and some tobacco and then chunks of wood. And I'm pretty sure there was coal in there. And it was the most horrible cigarette, but I was trying to quit smoking. And I thought, well, if I smoke more hot air and less tobacco, maybe I'll lose my desire to smoke. So that was terrible.
How'd that work for you?
Not that well. I was back to three packs of Pall Malls every day before you knew it.
I know. Been there, done that. I'm a professional quitter. I'm very good at it. Very good at it. The only problem was is every time I quit, I would go back stronger.
Well, I quit quitting after a while. It just was counterproductive.
Yeah.
My wife would beg me to quit, and then she would beg me to start smoking again because she couldn't stand being in the same house with me.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Well, everybody that joined us today, thank you again for coming, and thank you for being such a great audience. You have made our day. It wouldn't be nearly as much fun without you and all your interactions via the email. So you have spent about 33 and a half minutes with the anti-insurance insurance guy, Doug Jones, the Oklahoma insurance guy, with MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Go out and buy Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020 on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, by the way, Doug, you should tell them we've got the audiobook out now.
We have the audiobook out now. Yes, it was a long dry spell, but finally it just appeared one day. They never said, hey, your book's going to be done. They just put it up for sale. So we've sold about one a day since that day, and I'm hoping for more. I mean, there was such a demand for it that where are those guys? Get out there and buy that audiobook.
They were wanting this thing. Someone in the universe wanted this book. They actually were buying the 2019 version. They wanted it so
it was
bad.
It was a year, it was more than a year old, and they were still buying that thing because they like audiobooks better than real books, I guess.
Yeah, so all of you guys that listen to your stuff on the way to work or listen to your stuff, you know, as you're going to sleep at night, head out, buy yourself a copy of the audiobook. Lord knows Doug worked extra hard on this. It's almost May, and he's been working on this thing since late last year. So give him a vote of confidence and go buy one of those puppies.
Oh, thanks, Randy, and thanks for your wonderful engineering work. It sounds fantastic, they tell me.
Thanks, Doug, and thanks, family, and thanks, the people in the audience.
Bye-bye.